Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Mark Ireland, who is the author of Soul Shift. Mark is a advertising executive who has started a second career in consciousness survival research, and he's got a remarkable story to tell and has explored in detail how we can communicate with the loved ones in another dimension. They're not very far from us at all, and what he's found out about that. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining us.
This morning, or I guess it's noon your time, so thanks again
it
for
is,
having
It is, it is. So where are you calling in from?
I'm in Portland, Oregon now. Phoenix is my hometown. I moved up here about 3.5 years ago for both a job and also to be near my son, who had recently married, and appears to be soon making me a grandfather for the first time.
Well, great. That's wonderful. Yeah. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about your personal story and how you came to be interested in consciousness survival after death?
Well, what's interesting, a little bit different about me versus some other authors who have kind of tackled this subject, is I actually grew up with a father who was a minister, but he also was a psychic and a medium. So obviously he wasn't in a real mainstream church. He did grow up as a Methodist until age 12, and then had some questions that the pastor couldn't really answer, especially, you know, in terms of how to resolve the gifts that he had. So this is really my grandmother told me that she'd seen this in him, this ability in him, as early as age 3, but it really came out in a big way at age 5 when he was taken to the Columbus, Ohio Children's Hospital for surgery on his eyes. He'd been born cross-eyed, so this was a corrective process that they were undertaking. And when they were finished, he was basically strapped into a bed because they had his eyes cupped and taped and bandaged. And they didn't want him messing with them. And this particular nurse felt sorry for him and got him to agree that he would not touch the bandages if she let him out of the bed, and he agreed. So she let him out and then went on her rounds, came back, saw him bouncing a ball against the wall and catching it, and freaked out and thought he had removed the bandages, but he hadn't. He had a clairvoyant ability to see clairvoyantly. And so then she informed some of the doctors about this, and they did a number of different of their own tests on him at the time. Like, one was having him lay in the bed, and one doctor would stand at the foot of the bed, and another would talk from the doorway and ask who was standing in front of him at the time, and he got it right every time. So that was kind of the coming out party for him. And then as time went on, it developed to a greater degree. So by the time I was growing up, it was just part of our daily life. Dad knew everything that was going on. You really couldn't hide much from him. My older brother, you know, his exploits to drag race or have people buy beer for him when he was underage were always, he was busted.
Mm-hmm. And busted, yeah.
And my mom, one story that I think is kind of funny, early in their marriage, she was working on being a vegetarian, and she had succeeded for a couple months maybe. One day she got a craving for a hamburger. She went out and got this hamburger and came back home, and then later that evening, my dad came in, and the first words out of his mouth were, "So Shirley, did you enjoy your hamburger today?" Which irritated her. So that was kind of the household that I grew up in. But my dad.
Well, this really is extreme clairvoyance, though. I mean, yeah. I've not really heard. I've done this show for many years, and never really heard of anybody with your father's abilities. So I think he was quite unique.
He was. There are a few that were of that caliber. It's really interesting that he didn't become more famous because of it, because I've met and seen many of the top ones today, and there's just nobody in that league. And, you know, it's not to compare this is better than that, but it's a whole different level of ability. I know there was a woman named Florence Becker in San Francisco who thrived from, like, the 1929 to 1970. And from what I've heard of her, she was... maybe Arthur Ford was in that realm. I'm not sure. But anyhow, yeah.
But I think it's so interesting in your book that your father was extremely spiritually guided, and he was guided to go into nightclubs and other less spiritual communities in order to show people that this other realm existed. I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I do too. You know, and a lot of, at the time, people in his church are like, "What are you doing going to Las Vegas or going to nightclubs?" But he kind of referred back to the lessons that Jesus taught about, you know, hanging with the undesirable, so to speak, sharing his message with all types of people that wouldn't normally consider anything that might be deemed spiritual or, you know, non-materialistic. But he opened a lot of minds that way and touched a lot of lives. I've received so many communications from people over the years, especially the last 15 years or so, about their interactions with my father, and many have said that, you know, he saved their life through his guidance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from this, this sheer psychic and clairvoyant ability was the mediumship, which would sometimes it was the focal point of what he was demonstrating. Other times it would just kind of pop through spontaneously, even in nightclub settings, although not as often in that type of a venue, but sometimes just spontaneously. Mm-hmm. He'd be giving somebody a message, and he would go on about, you know, their uncle or their son or their dad and name them, and he could do first and last names and provide mm-hmm. great specifics that were very compelling. So that was really the background.
I've been very, the people who have left this plane and are in the next plane really do want to communicate with us. I've had a couple of examples myself. I had a patient who was in a mental institution. He was the son of some pretty famous televangelists, and he was a paranoid schizophrenic who had murdered people and was self-mutilating. So he came to me as a plastic surgeon because he was banging his head against the wall and had wounds. And he would come in to my office, and I had my office set up so that demonic stuff had to stay out of it. So when he came in, he was rather docile. Of course, he was chained with two bodyguards, and his psychologist would always come with him. And I got very close to him. I used to do healings on him, and they said no other doctor would get that close to him because he was pretty scary looking. But when he died in his 20s. He died of a complication of a bowel obstruction. And he came to me. I was actually eating lunch, and he came to me, and he would not leave me alone until I wrote a 7-page letter to his therapist, and his therapist shared it with his parents. And it was all about why he came in like this, why he was like this, the lessons involved. You can imagine all the detail.
Uh-huh.
And then his parents actually wrote me a nice note thanking me, because of course it was very disturbing to them that they had a paranoid schizophrenic son that was so violent. So, but the dead do want to communicate. They really want us to know what our lessons are here.
It's interesting that these televangelists were open to hearing that and not think of...
They were open to hearing an explanation of why. I mean, just like with your story, you need to know why things happen. When
sure.
really horrible things happen that you don't want it just to be random,
right?
And that's what. And I'm sure they're very. His parents are very spiritual, and they just needed to understand why.
Yeah. So, given that background, though, growing up, I ended up marrying at a young age and going to college, getting a degree, and then just going my own way in the business
mm-hmm.
world. And I suppose part of it was my dad always said I was very psychic. But I would see flashes of it at time, but I didn't feel like I was him. I was kind of my own person, so I forged my own path, and that was a more conventional one. And then it was 2004 that my youngest son, Brandon, passed while hiking on mountains near our home in Scottsdale. And that's really the catalyst for me getting back into my dad's field and for exploring this, and actually a lot of other things have happened as a result. Even co-founding an organization for bereaved parents that now has 50 affiliate locations across the U.S., Canada, and the U.K., and we're hosting our first ever conference in just about 3 weeks. We have over 400 people attending, so it's gone a long way since that time. But that was the event that shook me and woke me up and brought me back into this and to really look at my purpose in this life and how I could help other folks. And also, you know, as part of that was to investigate the whole field of mediumship and ways of communicating with spirit, or as you say, people in the next dimension.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a very healing thing. It's also something where one has to be careful of who they go to as a resource, because there are people that are out there to take your money and don't really care. And also people can get addicted to it, so it's something that should be used as a healing balm in a very careful way. And they can develop their own ability to communicate as well, just as you mentioned with the case you had.
Well, what I wanted to ask before we get started with Brandon's story is, have you ever heard of the chess-based experiment to show that the survival of consciousness after death?
Is that the chess game that was basically the chess moves were communicated through a medium, and then the medium's communication was through a chess master who had passed years ago? And that's one I have heard about. That it was pretty cool.
And that is so interesting because I'm sure when you study this, you know, academically and scientifically, so much informational based things that could be mind read. And you even mentioned this in your book. You know, any information that you know could be mind read from you, and then that would be not proving existence of consciousness after death. And then you also mentioned some things in your book about people having sealed envelopes of information and then dying and then trying to get the message across with the sealed envelope. But the most interesting thing, and Brandon's story caught my attention because, and you can tell the story, of course, but, you know, him bringing a music song in through a living artist. But the transfer of abilities across dimensions is something that I think is definite proof. And so the chess game was done. The medium didn't know how to play chess, and the spirit, the grandmaster, who was, I believe, Polish, who was deceased, did the moves. And this was before the internet, so they didn't do it very quickly. It was done very, very slowly between a current between the medium and the grandmaster, and that was and then a current, I guess they played against a current master,
right,
who was living. Yeah. And so the idea that it went, I think it went 62 moves. It was a very long chess game, and the point being is that since the medium didn't know how to play chess, it had to be a skill that was transferred through the medium.
Right.
Which is a pretty good proof.
Yeah, the medium didn't have any chess playing ability, so and the level of the play apparently was beyond just about everyone alive, other than a handful.
And then also the way the chess grandmaster had died quite a few years earlier, and the patterns were similar to patterns he played when he was living, and I think that I believe he ended up losing because the other master was doing things that were more current. I believe that was so there was also things within the and Bobby Fischer actually analyzed the thing. I first heard about this from Russell Targ when I interviewed him because his brother-in-law was Bobby Fischer.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That was the first story, and it just blew me away because it was actually published in the Journal of, Psy Research.
Mm-hmm.
One of the journals published it. You should look up the article. It's very, very interesting.
I did just read about that within the last month or two. I think there's another author in this field who does newsletters and blogs, and I think he put a link to the story, so I had read a synopsis of it. It was pretty cool.
You should call Russell Targ up. He'll be happy to explain, you know, to tell you the story directly with Bobby Fischer. It's just a very interesting story.
I met Russell once. It was
Did you?
In 2014, I was speaking to an organization in Palo Alto called Foundation for Mind Being Research, and lo and behold, I look and we've got a packed house, and I look in the audience, and there's Russell Targ, and next to him, Bernard Haich, who's a physicist. I don't know if you know of Bernard. He wrote a book called The God Theory, which is pretty compelling.
Right. I interviewed him as well. Yeah. So that's great. Well, let's go back to Brandon and how the story of how he passed and then what you've discovered since then.
Sure. So on that particular day, before he went on this hike, I had kind of an ill feeling about it. And, you know, I didn't know if I was just being a protective parent, but I had almost like an intuition, like something was going to go wrong and it could possibly take his life. I tried to talk him out of going. And his last words to me are, "We're going, Dad." And he was 18 years old. And I figured, you know, I was probably just being a worried parent. But, you know, it was hours later that I got a distress call from my older son, who'd been phoned by the other boys who were with Brandon on the mountain, noting that Brandon was having some difficulties and passing out, is what I was told. So they couldn't retain reception long enough to call for help, so I did, and I called the authorities and asked them to send a helicopter. And so we were across town, so my wife and I took off. And by the time we got there, there were just a horde of people, and I saw a fire truck and an ambulance, and helicopter came down, and they introduced me, when they found out who I was, introduced us to a chaplain, and I figured that's not good. And then a short time later, I just pressed him for an answer, and he said, "Yeah, your son did pass." And so that was probably the lowest point of my life, but it was also the trigger for what I talked about before. So I think the first thing that happened was, I think it was a couple days later, I was in the mortuary, and I had already called my uncle. Now, my father had passed by this point in time, but my uncle had very similar abilities to my dad, and he asked if he could do anything for me, and I just said, "Well, if you get any message or anything about Brandon's well-being, I'd really appreciate it." And so here it is a couple days later, and either he called me or I called him, I can't remember which, when I was in the mortuary, and he said, "Hey, Mark, I tried last night, but I couldn't get anything, but during my morning meditation today, your dad came to me, and he said he was there to help Brandon. Brandon was a little confused, but he helped him cross, and he wanted you to know that you're the best parents he ever could have had," which is the thing you want to hear. But along with that was a piece of evidence, and he said, "Your dad said Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen in his bloodstream that caused his heart to fail, caused cardiac arrest." And so at that point, we didn't really know what was wrong because the authorities weren't telling us anything, and all we knew was what his friends had shared, that he had his limbs were numb, and he claimed like his heart was beating fast. So 2 days after my uncle's message, I talked to the physician who performed the autopsy, and she said that he had had a severe asthma attack that caused his blood oxygen levels to dip and cause cardiac arrest. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty confirming there. Right. The other thing that I did early on, just within the first few days, was I kind of wanted to have my own personal connection. And and I'm not a great meditator, but sometimes I do well at it. And this particular time, I locked myself into a dark area. I think it was my closet, actually, and sat there quietly. And just took a while. And then a short time later, I saw, inside my mind's eye, I saw a picture of Brandon's face kind of scrolling across, smiling and happy. And then right behind that, I saw a picture of a cross with an oval loop at the top. And I'd seen those, but I didn't really know what it was. So after that, I had to Google it. To me, this was good evidence because then I found out it's an Ankh, which is the oldest cross of human history. The lower portion represents physical life, and the oval loop at the top representing eternal life. So I looked at this as a symbology to communicate to me on something I didn't already know. So to me, that was fairly compelling. Right. And then there were a number of things that happened after that. The next one, which you'd mentioned earlier, was about 6 months afterward. And ironically, going back to 2 weeks after Brandon passed, I got my first reading from somebody. Sandy Canales was her name, and one of the things she said was, I think you're going to see Brandon within 6 months, and it'll be like at the side of your bed. So 6 months later, my wife, Susie, and I go on a cruise with our older son, Stephen, and it was going to be to celebrate Brandon's graduation from high school. So we took Brandon's best friend, Stu Garney, in his place, so the boys went with us. Well, we were gone for a week. We got back, and as soon as we got home, Susie was sitting at the foot of our bed, and she suddenly felt a presence, and she saw a shadow figure to her right through her peripheral vision and knew immediately it was Brandon. And this lasted for maybe 30 seconds, I think, but it was really touching for her. But what was really intriguing and confirming about it, was the very next day we got a call, or she got a call from a musician friend of ours named James Linton. And James is somebody who had been on the mountain the day that Brandon passed and had tried to help but was unsuccessful. So James, he said, hey, Susie, I've got to share something with you, but I don't know how to tell you. And we had loaned, Brandon was a bass player, and we had loaned his bass guitar to James, and she thought he was going to say he broke the bass or something, but it wasn't that at all. He said, well, I was recording this song, and while I was in the midst of it, I felt another presence in there with me, and I saw a shadow figure through my peripheral vision, and then I saw flashes of white light. I thought I was just hallucinating or I needed water, so I got some water, I ate, I took a shower, but each time I came back, it became stronger and stronger. And then I eventually just said, in James' words, okay, Brandon, what do you want? And once he made that affirmation, he felt guided to rewrite the lyrics to this song. And even the bass line, which he played on Brandon's bass, he felt like wasn't his normal pattern of playing. He was left-handed, Brandon's right-handed too, so he had to play it upside down. But at the end of this, we ended up with a song, he said, called The Other Side. And he said, this is the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it.
Right, yeah. So that's a skill coming through, a skill that the musician didn't feel like he had, that but Brandon would have had.
Yeah, and I think even more so the style of it, the message in it, that he said, this gift is for you and your family. And actually, it's a gift for the world because there's a hopeful message within the song of purpose and of the ongoing nature of our awareness and personality after physical death. And it's a pretty rocking tune, too.
Right. So you've discovered quite a bit during your research about what life is like on the other side. Would you like to share some of that? I know Brandon shared that with you, and you've gained an understanding that we're very, very confined in this dimension, but in the other dimension, we're not confined at all.
Yeah, most of the readings, and I just to let the listeners know, I met with in Soul Shift. I had 4 different readings with some top mediums, and then I've written a second book called Messages from the Afterlife, where I dive deeper into the whole kind of research area. Mm-hmm. But in Soul Shift, through the 4 readings, I'd say most of the messages were, you know, specific things to identify Brandon and help me know that it was for real. For example, I know Jamie Clark had mentioned a photograph of Brandon and his brother. And he said he's showing me a picture of him and his brother arm in arm at the top of a, looks like a mountain pass, and it looks like Hawaii. And I couldn't place that at first. A few days later, I was digging through a drawer that had hundreds of photos, and I found the very photo he was mentioning, where Alison Dubois, you know, her mentioning she actually mentioned something about my dad's book, which had been given to me 2 weeks earlier by somebody who had been holding it for 12 years, and then Brent, you know, the whole idea of, I feel like a drowning, which was, you know, the lung problem Brandon had, because the autopsy physician had said that that severe asthma attack is basically the same thing as drowning. The lungs expand to almost meet in the middle. So, a lot of these were specific things like that, and then you get messages along with that that were hopeful. But I would say some of the things that I got that gave me a greater context were that the next dimension is more malleable, I guess I would say. There's more freedom. it's more of a thought plane, if you will. And we know from quantum physics that this world is that way, really. I mean, consciousness, the observer effect, validates that this world, you have to have consciousness. It's not like matter comes first. Consciousness comes first, and matter manifests. But it sounds like it's even more extreme in the next realm in terms of the freedom, and kind of just thinking about something makes it be, and the things that we view as important in this world really aren't that important. They're the things that we know deep down are important, which is love and compassion and relationships and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, one of the, we get explanations when we communicate in session, and one of the lessons that keeps coming through again and again is that in that realm you can do an infinite number of things simultaneously. So they say if you want to pray or ask help, or you know, to do that freely because you're not bothering anybody. You know, like look at all the people that pray to Jesus on a daily basis. I mean, and Jesus can do an infinite number of things simultaneously, so it's fine. You know, see,
right.
It's not a problem for anybody. Because sometimes, you know, we think, you know, you don't want to bug somebody who's famous because everybody else is trying to bug them. But it's really true. They can do an infinite number of things simultaneously. And if they want to be somewhere, they just think there, and then they're there. Your father did help Brandon through the transition, but then you also learned that your father was hanging out with another group of people that you found interesting. Would you like to, because it was Brandon, and your father was taking Brandon fishing, which I think is fascinating. So
yeah, that came through several
times.
The
group that, yeah, that's so fascinating to me.
And my dad, he wasn't a big outdoorsman or anything, but I do recall when I was maybe 12 that he took us fishing once, my sister and I.
Mm-hmm.
And when Brandon was young, we lived in Denver for 5 years, and we used to go to this lake called Sprague Lake at Estes Park, and we would take him fishing. So the mediums, and Allison was one of them, I believe. She said, you know, your father's taking your son fishing since you're not able to. And that came through, I think, two or three times. The book's been out for a while, so I have to dig into the mental archives here for some of this. But,
well, feel free to, you know, feel free to put information from the next book, even though I haven't read it. You know, you feel free to talk about that information too.
Sure.
But it's just interesting that one of the things I felt was interesting many times. There's animals with the deceased, and your father said that. He got Brandon a dog. Is that right? A small dog?
Yeah, there was a dog with him, too, which he didn't have a dog when he was on the earth. I'm not saying he was asking for one or it was a big deal, but we never had one. And he did have allergies and things. So that one came through a number of times. And each one, they said, it's a small dog. So there was consistency. And that was one of the other validating things, was just the consistency of the messages that we got.
Yeah.
But as far as the people my dad hung out with, one of the things that I remembered was I started being drawn to meet not only a number of these top mediums, but also people in the field that do research on this topic. Tricia Robertson of the Scottish Society of Psychical Research is one. We've become good friends, and we collaborate. And I know that I met people that were associated with Montague Keen in England, and he was a very big figure in this, and his name came up in one of the readings as though my father had met him. And my father always was interested in the science part of it because he wanted to provide more validation to the person out there who wouldn't just go, you know, for the emotional or less pragmatic approach to proof, if you will, or evidence. So it sounded like he had met and was collaborating with other people, including scientists who had passed, to help bring about some of these changes and bring this information to the world.
I think that's great. And there is a team on that side. I talked to Robert Schwartz not too long ago, who he's developing a soul telephone that is a device where people can actually talk like we're talking to their deceased relatives or whoever, you know, is in that realm. And there is actually a team on the other side, and it actually includes Michael Jackson, which is interesting because Michael communicated through me to Gary at one point. And then Gary called me back to tell me that Michael was actually on the team working on the Soul Telephone. So isn't it interesting that there's a team on that side and then a team on this side,
right,
and they're working toward the same goal? I think that's fabulous.
Yeah, breaking down barriers and hopefully changing the logjam of the scientific materialistic way of thinking that's so embedded in academia.
There was a information that I read in the Noetic Science literature about a group, I think it was Noetic Science Group over in Europe, where they channeled information, went to the local Radio Shack store, and were able to convert a regular, not a digital TV, but one of the older TVs, you know, the ones with tubes, into something where they could actually see and hear people who were deceased. You might want to look that up, too.
Wow. Yeah, I know there was a gentleman, I think in Italy or Greece, who had a series of communications through radio transmissions, too. So
Right,
variety of ways. And the EVP phenomena is popular with people now, too, using analog tape recorders and such, and even digital recorders to get messages. Sometimes they're not that clear, and I feel like maybe some of those are a stretch, but other times they're somewhat compelling.
Well, if we're really ascending, like many, many different sources say we are, if we're in a higher vibrational environment, I feel that we're going to be able to communicate a lot easier than we are in a third dimensional kind of dense and cloudy environment that we've been in. Because there's so much negative energy on the planet still. You know, it's still quite dense here.
Yeah.
And I believe that once we are able to ascend into a higher realm, we will be able to have a soul telephone. We will be able to have, you know, these communication devices that are more standard. I think it's going to be something that's going to be fairly easy to do.
Yeah, it's funny you used the word dense. I remember my uncle, shortly before his passing, referring to this world, and he says, dense world. And he had mentioned his concept or way of relaying the different dimensions or different ways of communicating was like a radio dial, you know, tuning in here or here or here, but each one represents maybe this different realm or plane, if you will.
Well, that's why, you know, you said that you test the spirits because you always say the Lord's Prayer and you are cautious when you go into a medium to make sure that the information is coming from the highest level. That's because there is a level called the astral level, which isn't too far away, where there's tricksters and things that can try to make you go out, especially if they, you know, try to make you go out and you know, sell all your stocks or buy certain things, or it usually has to do with money and power. But you know, the real spiritual world isn't going to give you that much advice on that level. You know,
right,
because it's much more advice about, like you say, relationships, love, compassion, and then your true purpose in life. You know, you get a lot of information about what you're supposed to be doing compared to what you might be doing, and encouraging you on to your life's purpose.
Right, and I think a lot of the mediums will talk about that mode of communication and how the spirit that you're trying to connect with, you know, is usually going to be a little higher level than the astral realm, and it's like they're lowering their vibration and the medium is raising theirs, so they kind of meet in the middle, so to speak. And that's how it's been described to me.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about some of the things you've been involved in, some research. What are your ideas on if somebody had a death of a child or death of a parent and want to go to a medium? What's some of the things that you would advise them?
Well, first off, it can be a very helpful and healing thing, but the first thing they need to be is ready emotionally. So, you know, I'd say usually the first few weeks or a month are a little bit premature because the person is not in an emotional state that really is suited for that. And part of it, too, is it's when you meet with a medium, there's an energy exchange, and they're really kind of the conduit to connect with the deceased person and for the medium to have good communication. So if their vibration's really off and they're down and really not in the right frame of mind, it can, you know, affect the reading. But when they are ready, which, you know, I would say maybe 3 months would be a good time to maybe consider it if they're feeling mm-hmm. ready for it. Then the question is finding the right person and finding somebody who's trustworthy and credible. And there's a number of ways you can do that. What you don't want to do is just go for the first sign that you see that says psychic readings or something like that on the road.
Right, yeah.
I would say, well, for one thing, there are some organizations that do this research and recommend mediums based on criteria of testing that they've done. One mm-hmm. is the Winbridge Institute in Tucson, run by mm-hmm. Dr. Julie Beischel. She's got a number of people. The difficulty there is a lot of those mediums are really backed up. So what I did
and
actually on my...
It's a telephone. That would be often a telephone.
Yeah, and you'd probably be doing most often a telephone reading, which is just as good mm-hmm. as in person, sometimes mm-hmm. even better, because then you don't have the medium looking at the sitter. You know, mm-hmm, some people would
right.
be concerned about cold reading, but aside from that, just it can be distracting to the medium if the sitter's very emotional. But
right.
I've undertaken a testing process on my own and developed a certification process since 2014, and I've certified probably 10 mediums who've had to go through a test process of 5 blind mm-hmm. readings and generate suitable results that would help, you know, signify that they have the ability to a level weren't passing. So that people can access that website through my website as well. My website.
And what's your website again?
It's markirelandauthor.com.
All right. One other point, Mark, is that right after I had a number of people ask me to contact their loved ones right after they died. And it's important for people to understand that right after somebody dies is not the time to contact them. There's often a period of confusion. There is often a time where people don't even realize they're dead. I worked in the hospital a lot, and I would have discarnate entities attach right near my neck and shoulder and head. And, of course, I could feel them, and it was really uncomfortable. But I couldn't get rid of them, so I would have to go get other clairvoyants to help me, you know, kind of push them off. And each time, they would argue with me that they weren't dead. And they were usually people that were in, like, auto accidents that became unconscious and went to the hospital and then died in the ICU. So they had no memory of even dying. You know, all of a sudden, they're out of their body. They attach to me because I'm a light in the hospital. You know, I'm something that they're attracted to. But it happened a number of times. And it happened to more people than just me. It happened to friends of mine who are paramedics and nurses. So, you know, sometimes people don't even know they're dead if the circumstances are right. So, and then they go through the process that Brandon went through, which is getting used to things, meeting their relatives, getting things, you know, kind of settled down emotionally. Because it must be a real shock when you're 18 just to, you know, suddenly be not able to go back into your body. You know, that
right.
I mean, it's a real shock. And then many... not everybody, but many people go through a life review sooner
right.
rather than later. But the life review takes a while. And so when my mom passed, I would kind of monitor when she was through the life review. And when she was through the life review, then I could communicate with her. So, in other words, they have a process that they go through after death. So communication right away, other than maybe in the dream state, I know people have dreams that are very vivid soon after people die. But other than that, I think 3 months is a good waiting period for that
yeah.
reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what, I guess we're talking about other things that you would advise people who are seeking mediums out. Is there any other things that you want to...
Well, one of the things I'd talk about, so I'd mentioned to you earlier that I co-founded an organization called Helping Parents Heal, and this started mm-hmm. really, there was a woman in Scottsdale who had formed a group, just a single group there, and asked me to speak at her first meeting, which was in 2011, And the reason she'd done that is, I'm not going to name names, but there are other organizations for bereaved parents out there that are large, but they don't allow the discussion of spiritual matters or evidence for the afterlife. And that's really the thing.
That's kind of missing the point, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the thing people crave the most, and is really
it is,
the most healing. So we decided, you know, she wanted to have a meeting where this could be discussed openly. Mm-hmm. So I spoke at the first meeting, and she drew about 40 people. So I thought, wow, she's onto something here. And about, mm-hmm. it was probably 6 or 9 months later, one of my medium friends, Tina Powers in Tucson, said, Mark, I think your real mission in life, or your primary one, is to help bereaved parents. I think you should start some organization. So I started thinking about what I could do, and I thought, you know, Elizabeth's organization or her group, it's the right approach, but she's only got one location. She doesn't have a website. She doesn't have a newsletter. So I talked to her, and I said, hey, I'm going to do this thing on a national or international basis. Do you want a partner? Because you already have the blueprint. And she jumped at the chance, and her group had been called Parents United in Loss. We changed the name to Helping Parents Heal. And today we have 10,000 Facebook members on a private page.
Wow.
We have 50 affiliates across the U.S., Canada, and overseas. Mm-hmm. We have a newsletter with thousands of subscribers. And we're having our first ever conference in Phoenix, Scottsdale area in April, and we have over 400 attendees. We have a number of really gifted people there. Including George Anderson. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's one of the top mediums in the country. And then we have some scientists and other folks. So one thing we've learned, or I've learned through the process, is kind of this four pillars of healing. So the first is, and this is just my opinion, but this is what I've seen that works. The first is for people to hopefully have a supportive family unit or people that are close to them. Number two is to build relationships with people who have been through the same thing. So the group actually helps with this because they meet people who have been through the same thing and can relate to them. The third is to provide or perform service in some way. Now, most people can't do that immediately after a loss because it's too traumatic. But in time, if they start to turn their energy instead of away from, you know, the just focus on grief, but focus on helping somebody else, and it doesn't matter what it is. A lot of the parents end up doing it, you know, based on helping an organization that's focused on what caused their child to die, whether it be cancer research or whatever, or a foundation for, it could be for homeless people or for foster children or whatever. But the idea of performing service not only helps others, it helps you too. And then the last thing is this, the ability to discuss signs and other experiences, such as mediumship readings, that provide people comfort and confidence in the reality of the continuity of consciousness after death.
I would imagine there's quite a few people that have spiritual awakenings when a child dies, just similar to what you had, but and that may be the most important thing for them to get out of it. But I do want to mention one other thing that happened years ago, but I don't know whether you remember when Bill Cosby's son was murdered when he stopped to help somebody on the side of a road. Do you remember that years and years ago?
Yeah, I do remember
that. At that time, I got a very, very strong impression that he volunteered to die in order to get his father's attention about something. Of course, I didn't know what it was. And then now, with the history coming out of his father's behavior...
Yeah.
It's just a wonder if that wasn't a warning, you see?
Yeah.
In other words, I'm sure his son had an early death date. I mean, we all have death dates, as you know, that we have potential death dates, and then we have, like, definite death dates that, you know, it's like our soul, it's a soul contract that's up. But so you don't necessarily just die on that last death date. You can die earlier. But certainly, in retrospect, that message that I got that the son's death was primarily to wake Bill Cosby up in some way. So it's just interesting.
Yeah,
so there could be a specific message for a parent that they get or don't get, you know, depending on circumstances. But I would say probably the most common one is the one you had, which is a greater spiritual awakening and exploration of consciousness after death. I think that that is.
And the other thing I've seen is even people that I guess considered themselves spiritual before that were maybe more traditionally religious or even fundamentalist in a way, I've had a number of them come to me and say, hey, this blew up my whole way of looking at things, and I'm no longer confined by those rules or that narrow mindset. And, you know, things they would have thought were, you know, bad or they shouldn't do before, like going to a medium, they're, you know, they're embracing because they went through a very painful process. So they were the caterpillar and came out the butterfly.
Yeah. I did an interview with an author years ago called he was a clinician that developed a technique for afterlife communication, and it's a technique. I don't know if you've ever heard about the eye movement therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah,
you know, where they move. Okay, that one
is Dr. Alan Botkin. Alan Botkin?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he developed the afterlife communication that even works in atheists. You know, his book is so fascinating. And that's something that, again, I think you should wait about 3 months. But we have a chiropractor here, Dr. Mike Greenberg, that does that method. And the first time I was with him, because I introduced him to the book and asked him if he could do the method, because he was very well-versed in the EMDR. And so he did it with me, and the person that came through was a surgical tech that had quit and gone to work for another plastic surgery center in town, because I would not do her tummy tuck. I kept getting no, 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 she can't have a tummy tuck. And they did her tummy tuck, and 3 days later she died of a massive blood clot. And so, you know, that was why I was getting not to do it. And she came forward and talked to me, like she was right there. And she said, you know, I never realized how much spiritual protection we had here. And she gave me a whole bunch of information about, you know, everything. But she died not on her death date. She died because she didn't listen to her mother, who kept saying not to get the tummy tuck, to me, and a lot of other people who kept advising her not to get that surgery. So sometimes you die because you don't listen to your intuition.
Exactly.
And
other things in life, too. We make bad decisions when we go away from that. When you trust your heart,
exactly,
really, I find I make the right decisions more often than not if you really go that way. Speaking of EMDR, I have a quick story about a couple that I met who lost a son, and they had that process done by another clinician in the Bay Area. It's pretty interesting, but the husband went first. And it took a very long time to get him to the point where he went into that altered state of awareness.
Right.
But he did see his son, and the son said two things. He said, Dad, this isn't going to work for Mom. And then he said...
there you go.
He says, ask Mom about the color code book. And so after he had come out, he didn't say anything to his wife because he didn't want to influence her, but she went next, and it didn't work for her. But then after she came out, he said, was there something about a color code book? And she said, well, yeah, just before our son passed, we had this book called The Color Code Book, and we were discussing it, and it was about how colors represent different states of emotion or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a pretty specific piece of evidence.
Very specific,
Yeah.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting the son knew that it wasn't going to work for the mother?
Wrong personality type.
That's right. Well, we're coming up to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure. So my website, and people can reach me through there. It also has some of my other media appearances. It has a short clip of me on Discovery Channel for a mediumship experiment that took place at the University of Arizona and some other interesting things. But the website address is markirelandauthor.com. So that's Mark with a K, Ireland like the country, and the word author all strung together, markirelandauthor.com.
Great. Well, I'd like to invite you back to the show, not just for your father's book on psychic development, but also your second book, because it sounds like the you go further into this research. That I'd like to discuss that with you.
Sure, that would be great. I'd love to come back.
And we have a few more minutes left. Do you have anything that you'd like to say to the audience is an inspirational message?
Just that I think it's important for us to view this life as having purpose. I mean, we live in a society where we're taught that we're just matter bodies and our brains are who we are, and I found that is not true. So it's important to realize it's not just a universe and a world of chaos where it's meaninglessness, but we do have purpose. We're here for a reason, and we need to see it through, and we should enjoy it and relish the things that we go through. Even the struggles that we have and the pain that we suffer really helps mold us into more than we were before and what we can become. So it's kind of like hang in there and forge mm-hmm. through, because you'll be better for it on the back end. Even in the song, The Other Side, that I mentioned earlier, one of the lines says, just realize it was worth it. And that's hard
right.
to do when you lose a kid. But when you look at the yeah. big picture and you think how short this life is, you can view things a little bit differently.
Well, in our next interview, if you can get the digital copy of that song to Don, he can play it during the broadcast.
Absolutely.
Got
I've got
available.
An MP3
that
of it.
That would be fun. Yeah, that would be great.
So just
and
have
I do want to mention,
out.
Yeah, that'd be great. I do want to mention, too, that as I've communicated more with this higher realm, and it doesn't just contain discarnate humans that were living here. It contains a lot of other help, you know, angels, archangels, and other ascended masters and other help that is available. I don't think we realize how much help we really have when we're here. All we have to do is ask. You know, the Bible says, ask and you shall receive. And it's really true. If you don't ask, a lot of times you don't get the help. You do in emergency situations, when you're not supposed to die, but you're in a death-threatening situation. But in general, we have to ask for help. And so what I would encourage the listeners is to understand there's a huge amount of help available. So even if it's just trying to find a parking space, ask for help, ask for guidance. There's nothing too small to ask for help for. And then the big things, you're not bothering anybody, ask for help. And that's something, and then follow your guidance. Because a lot of the times the help is going to come in thoughts and signs and other things in your environment, or maybe just a stranger coming up to you and saying something to you that is the answer to a major problem that you have. So stay open for these communications and ask for help. So thanks, Mark. I look forward to interviewing you on your other books and your
Great.
Dad's
Well,
book.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to coming back.
Great. This is Dr. Susan Cobb. We've been interviewing Mark Ireland on Soul Shift, a very interesting discussion about the survival of consciousness after death. Next week, we will be interviewing Penny Pierce, Transparency, Seeing Through Our Expanded Human Capacity. And the on the 7th, Brant Coltwright, The Neurogenesis, Diet, and Lifestyle. Thank you very much for joining us, and join us next week.